So glad you're here tonight. While we're waiting for a few more people to get here, I want you just to talk to people around you. And here's what I want you to say or tell them. What year did you graduate high school? Okay? So tell that quickly. Number two, I want you to use up to five words, bullets, to describe your life in high school. Okay? Now, they probably don't know you can say whatever you want, but five words that you would use to describe your life in high school, not necessarily you, but your life in high school, okay? What year did you graduate? Five words to describe your life in high school. Go. Talk amongst yourselves. Okay. We're going to regroup. If I would love to hear some of you share. So I want to find out the most recent graduate. So who thinks they're probably the most recent high school graduate? Raise your hand if you think you have a shot at that. Right here. Yeah. What year?
2008.
It's amazing. 2008, four kids. It's really remarkable. All right, 2008. Anybody later than that? Okay, who might be the oldest graduation date? All right? What year?
83.
Darian. You're younger. What year? Darian, what year?
85.
All right. How about you?
73.
73! Love that. I'm also 85. I look the oldest, though. Lloyd, I look a lot older than you. That's great. I love it. And a lot of people in between. So glad you're here. I ask you to come up with five words to describe life for you in high school, just to kill a little bit of time. But I want you to think for a minute about how the world today for children, not just high school students, but middle school students and younger, how the world today is in many ways exactly the same. So what would be some of your answers to that? How is the world today in many ways exactly the same? Any thoughts?
Lunchroom.
There's a lunchroom. And that can be painful still. But there's a lunchroom. Yes. Keep going. What else is the same? Raise your hand so I can call on you. Yes.
Clicks.
Clicks. They don't call them that anymore. They're called clusters. Or friend groups. But they do exist. And I'm going to talk a lot about that tonight because it's very different. It looks the same, but it's so different. All right. What else might be the same?
Alcohol.
Athletics. Athletics, those don't usually go very well together, but they're both still a reality. Yes?
Same, sports as well.
Yeah, sports.
Grades.
Grades.
Peer pressure.
Peer pressure's still there. Yeah.
Carpool.
Carpool, yeah. Some of that. What else?
Skirt length.
Skirt length. It's definitely the same. Wow. All right. What else?
Relationships.
That's very true. They're very important. But boy-girl relationships are very different than they were when most of us were in high school or middle school. One of the best books you can read on parenting is your high school yearbook or your middle school yearbook. So to prove that, I brought mine. This is the 1984, because I like my picture better than my senior year. So this is my junior year. 1984, the title of our yearbook is Worth It, and I've not looked at it in a long time, but this is one of the best books I've ever read on parenting. Why would I say that? Perspective. Because when I open the pages and I read what people wrote, which by the way, they don't do anymore, like my kids' yearbooks, they don't write in them. I know it's, some of you are going to miss that. Until you go back and read what people wrote in yours, then you'll be like, So this right here was written by a girl named Carrie. You know Carrie? Remember her? That's my wife, Christina. Carrie. Carrie was a girl who had the same last name as me. And I met Carrie about a month after I became a Christian. It was the summer of my ninth grade year. In between ninth grade and 10th grade, I accepted Christ June 23rd, 1982. About a month and a half later, I guess, started playing football in high school. Then school started. Fifth hour biology. I'll never forget it. I'm sitting there. And I love you. I'm happily married. I think my wife is amazing. So this is before her. Just so everybody knows, all right? And I'm sitting there, and this girl walks in. And every guy in the class, fifth hour biology, Mrs. Armstrong, just goes, wow. Okay? Now, I described myself. Can you tell them what I said about myself? Do you remember?
Shy.
Shy. Very shy. Terrified of girls. I didn't say that, but I was.
Insecure.
I didn't say that. What? Did you just pick up on that? Just kidding. I did. I said it.
Lazy.
Yeah.
Athletic.
Good looking. I don't think I said it. Anyway, this girl wrote at the end of, I guess it's around May of 1984, and we had been dating for a long time, really since that day. So that day, she walks in the class. I am about second row in, five seats back. She walks in, hands the teacher a piece of paper. She looks at it. She goes and sits over there, literally four rows over, same depth in the classroom. Every guy's like, whew. And then Mrs. Armstrong says, you know, today we need to pick our biology buddies for the year, and somebody needs to be kind enough to invite Carrie to be their biology buddy. And I'm like, oh, this is my moment. But I'm terrified, literally terrified. But I'm going to do it. So I get up, and I walk over front room, come back, and I sit down next to her. I said, would you like to be my biology buddy? She said, sure. So she gives me, the most important part was her phone number. Because it was on the piece of paper. You got to share phone numbers. So I got her number. You know, and I told all the guys, I got her number. I called her that night. I said, hi, Carrie, this is Mark. Mark who? Davis. From biology? Oh, we have a project or something? That was a bad sign. I said, no, but I want to invite you to go to Young Life with me, which was, you know, a Christian club. That's how I became a Christian. So she says, sure. So I go, I pick her up, which means I walk to her house and we walk to the Young Life club. And I found out about, 2 weeks later that she was high. I didn't know. I didn't even know what that meant, really. She was still beautiful, though, high or not. So that's all that really mattered. Walked her back home after Young Life, and something happened to me. I was like, this is my one shot. So I met her like earlier that day, Young Life Club that night. I have her phone number, and I laid one on her. I don't mean like the gospel. I mean a smack right on the mouth. I was like, what do you think about that? In my head, that'd be weird to have said. Her eyes were huge, and I'm like, we're dating, you know? And I walked away, and we dated for 1 month. I'm sorry. We dated for 1 year, 11 months, and 17 days. That's a long, unhealthy, disastrous relationship that in many ways identified me in high school. So I hadn't seen this in years. This is what she wrote. So how many would like to hear it? Too bad. All right, so this is my yearbook. If you want to come up later and look at pictures and stuff, you can see. But the reason it's a good book on parenting is when I see faces of teachers and classmates, I remember things about how they made me feel. And I remember things about how I made other people feel. And sometimes that's good, like that was a good relationship, and other times it's bad. Now, I'm married happily to this beautiful woman on the front row. Her name's Christina. This is her high school yearbook. Did you know I was going to bring it? And I'm happy to read a lot that's in here. Christina and I were not at all alike in high school. I said last week, I am much more introverted than she is. She was a cheerleader in high school, so she has no problem getting up in front. But she didn't have to do that. She was really popular. I was not really popular. She drank in high school. I've never been drunk. Is that fair to say? Okay. Yeah, she did. She's like, thanks for sharing that. She did. She became a Christian when she was little and began to live that disconnected life a little bit. Is that fair to say it that way? And we're going to talk a lot about that. Not about her, but about the reality of that and what it looks like. We talked about this and how, as you just flip through the pages of your yearbook, you feel things. You see things. You're reminded of things. You're horrified by some things. And that's why a yearbook, your yearbook particularly, is a great book on parenting. Okay? But there's an illusion that a lot of people make. And it's not very smart to think that it's just the same. The world that your child is growing up in is radically different than the world that you grew up in. And if you don't believe that, you really are clueless. And it doesn't matter if you just graduated even. Things have changed fast. And I think you know that. The first night we met, I said, you're here for two reasons. One is fear, and the other is what? You remember? Love. Thank you for listening. So fear and love. We're afraid of what we see or what might be coming. We're afraid of what we think we see. We're afraid of what we do see. And we love our children so much. And we want them to be protected. We want to know what the world's like they're growing up in. So I'm just curious. Give me some words that you would use to describe the culture our children are growing up in today. There's positive words, so don't think it's just negative. But what are some of the words you would use to describe today's culture? Okay, that's good. I didn't hear a word all at once. So raise your hand. I'll call on you. And we're here. Yes?
Fast.
It is. So, were you going to say the same thing? It is so fast. We were just talking about that at the beginning. This time is flying. Actually, that's one of the reasons this is called parenting in the present. It's like, how can we be more present in the moment when the moment is just, right? Somebody else. Yes?
Social media.
Social media is very different. I didn't have a cell phone in 1985. My second grader is asking when she gets hers, you know, because she has classmates that have them. Okay, what else?
Unfiltered.
Unfiltered. That's a very, very interesting perspective and word. What else? Over here. Yes?
Indulgent.
Indulgent. Mm-hmm. Keep going. There's a lot of words that we could use. Keep telling what you think.
Connected.
Everywhere. Right? All over the world. What else? Yes?
Entitled.
Entitled. Yes?
The opposite word, though. Unmoored. I feel like we've lost our mooring.
Yeah.
We're no longer moored to the Bible.
Yeah, it's just kind of drifting. There's nothing's really right or wrong. Whatever you think is right or wrong is...
All
yeah. In the back.
Connected, but also less connected. Less face-to-face. I just pick up the phone and chit-chat.
I got a picture sent to me by a young member of our church who can't come on Wednesday nights, but he's got two little ones, and it's hilarious. And we don't have projection tonight or I'd do it, but he says, I think this couple needs to come to your class. And it was a couple at a park, and he just took it on his iPhone, and the couple, and I actually told him, I said, I think I know him. Anyway, the couple is at the park, and both the husband and the wife are looking at their phones doing something, and the kids are just there playing by themselves, you know, and they're just doing this, you know, parenting in the present. And I was like, wow. And then I said, so what were you doing? You know, connected, but not so connected. What else? Yeah.
Tolerant.
Yeah. It's a big word. Don't want to appear to be intolerant. Yep.
Kids-centered.
Yeah. Very much so. What else?
Scheduled.
Overscheduled. Yeah.
Overexposed.
Overexposed. Okay. So what fears do you have? I told you you're afraid. What fears do you have?
Porn.
Pornography. If you want to see something interesting, look up Covenant Eyes. Look up Porn Statistics 2015. And just do that. Just look at it. It's really remarkable. And they've done the best they can to really try to identify how genuine these statistics are. And that's changing too, by the way. 90% of porn now is not paid for. Okay, so that just gives you an idea, which means it's amateur, which means it's just people doing really wicked stuff. It's terrible. What else? What are you afraid of?
Substances.
Yeah, and they change. They're invented. What else?
Entitled children.
Mm-hmm. What else?
Shallow relationships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bullying,
yeah. I mean, I told you all my story the first night. The kid throws a ball at my daughter. I throw a ball back at the kid. Who was the bully? He was. All right.
One more, like narcissism with the selfies or just the selfies?
Yeah, and the disconnect that the selfies are so, I mean, they make weird faces and take pictures of themselves it's like all day long. You know, like, what? You're prettier than that. You know what? I don't understand. Somebody else? Did I see a hand back here? Yes.
Or self-image based on the wrong thing.
Yeah, that's everywhere.
Missing what's important.
Yeah. In the back.
Promiscuity.
Yeah. Still very real and very perverted, very different. So different. Keep going.
Predators.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a scary world. All right. I'm going to talk about things that you didn't mention mostly. I'm going to talk about things that you probably can't see unless you're really immersed in the culture. And I want to start by going back about 12 years. So it's 2003, 2004. I had just been called to serve as the youth pastor of this church. And I had already been a youth pastor for about 20 years. And I knew when I was leaving St. Louis that kids had changed. I could not put my hand on it. I just couldn't figure out what was different, but I knew something was different. And other youth pastors like me, about the same age, who've been doing it a while, were saying the same thing. Chap Clark, who has a PhD, teaches at Fuller Theological Seminary, was speaking at a conference. He was the heavyweight speaker. He was the evening speaker. I was the lightweight morning guy. And so I was speaking in the morning, and we built a friendship that started maybe 5 years before that. He was awesome. He still is. He told me that he was about to finish a book, and the title of the book was called Hurt. And he said, it's been amazing, Mark. He said, I went into this school as a substitute teacher, but I was a long-standing substitute, so I was in the same class because one of the teachers had to essentially go and leave. And he goes, and I did this research project coming in just to truly try to understand the culture of high school students. And he'd been working with Young Life and other churches for a long, long time, teaching at Denver Seminary, then at Fuller, really bright mind. And so I said, well, what do you see? And he began to talk about the different things he was seeing. A couple years later, his book comes out. I read his book, which you should read. It's called Hurt. We might even have some in our bookstore. You can certainly download it on Kindle. It's got a second edition now that came out in 2011. And he began to say things that I was like, that's it. That's exactly it. And it's not something that you can necessarily pick up on and see. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit tonight because it's really, really significant. But the first thing he says is, it's a different world. Now, why would the yearbook be a good book? Some of the stuff's the same. Feelings of isolation, desire for peer relationships, desire to be connected, desire to succeed in some cases. Not all cases, but some. But the world is radically different too. Not just by the things that we've been talking about that are really just the way the culture's changed, but how kids are even thinking about the world that they are living in. Why do you think he titled the book Hurt? Any idea? Because he said the majority of kids he talked to said, in one way or another, I feel so hurt. By who? My parents, my coaches, my teachers, my youth pastors. They're the enemy. He's like, well, why? Because they put so much pressure on me to be perfect. They put so much pressure and expectation on me not to let them down, not to disappoint them, not to in any way embarrass the family, okay? And he said, these kids are living in a world of hurt. And he said, and I say it carefully because they've created almost a subculture that exists in what he called the world beneath, which adults are not welcome into, which has a very sophisticated social spectrum. Where we live, you know, it's pretty interesting. Kids are very polite. I handed out blow pop suckers, which I'm part of Dad's Club. And once a month on a Friday, we stand out there. Darian's husband, Dave, is actually the president of this club. And about 20 dads stand at the doorways as these kids are coming into the school. And all we do is hand them a blow pop. Have a good day. Have a good day. I would say 80% of the kids, when I say, how are you? They'll say, I'm doing fine. How are you? They're polite, but underneath their world, you can just see it. There's pain, there's anxiety, there's stress. Then you might go, what was like that for me too? It was, I know, but it's different, okay? And the things I want to talk about in terms of how it's different, there are three. I want to talk about what it means for kids to be living in layers, okay? How many of you have ever heard that term? Okay, living in layers. Secondly, what are the things that are facing them that are really radically different in terms of the things we have been talking about, like sexuality, loneliness, and stress. I'm going to hit those three. And then I'm going to end tonight by talking about how do we live in this then, right? Now, we're not going to cover everything tonight, but many of the topics that come up tonight are going to be addressed over the next several weeks in different ways, in a very practical way, okay? But as I talk about it, I want to remind you of where we were last week. Last week, if you weren't here, we were talking about a foundation. And the temptation is to build a foundation that is on perfectionism. And there's a reason we want perfectionism, is because we were designed for perfection. And if you're in Christ, we believe that in eternity we'll have perfection. But we won't this side of heaven. We will not have it. Things will break down. And we're going to talk about that some tonight. So how are we to live in it? Because there is a way. I promise you there is. So anyway, let's start by talking about living in layers. This is the thing that I begin to see that was so different than what I've been seeing the 2 decades prior. Chap Clark said he was stunned to see students who were talking to him, or he was actually eavesdropping on conversations with students that he began to know pretty well, who would move from one cluster to perhaps another, or from one class to another, and they would be a radically different person from one place to another, in front of one group to another. Now, you might be thinking, oh, we did that too. It's called, you know, wearing masks, changing. There's a difference. And I knew that too, but I was like, something's different. What is it? Here's what I mean. Not uncommon for students on a Sunday morning to be connected to a youth group, to be in that youth group, raising their hands and worshiping God. I mean, you would not at all deny that they love Jesus. And in that moment, they look like it. And so you wouldn't deny it. But hours later, they're making specific plans for how they're going to engage in some pretty wicked, sinful behavior. Coming back from mission trips, I was speaking at a camp in North Carolina, and another youth pastor was there, and he goes, we had 3 girls lose their virginity the second night they got back from the mission trip. How's that happen? Okay, now tonight, I'm not trying to be sensationalistic. I'm not trying to create fear. I'm trying to tell you that something had changed. And what Clark went on to say is that kids are now living in layers. And the layers exist in a different way because they believe that when they go from one layer to the next, this is where it's different, they are being authentic. Because in that layer, they are authentic. In that moment, that is who, or in that layer, that is who they truly are. Okay? Now, in the 2011 version of the book, he doesn't use layers. He uses the word selves. They are different selves. Same person, different selves. How many of you have ever heard this before? A couple of people. How many of you think maybe you've seen that? Maybe if you grew up not that long ago, some of the high school students, which is really scary, who were in that youth group when I got here, are sitting among us. They have children now. And that's really, in many ways, the world that you guys were growing up in. Now, they don't know it. And if you talk to them about it, they won't necessarily say, oh, yes, mother, you're wise. That's exactly the world we live in. They're not going to do that. But the truth is, these disconnects that exist are pretty profound. The difference is, they don't know. They don't know that that's what the reality is of their life. And when they do discover it, if somebody points it out, this is what's pretty scary, is they don't think it matters. Okay? Now, if you go home tonight, if your kid is younger or older, and say, are you living in layers? That's not really going to be helpful, okay? That's not the takeaway. But I want to expose something tonight that I don't think you're probably going to see. It's not the stuff that's easy to see about culture. This is the reality of how many children are living. And it's trickling down, okay? And it's part of our culture in such a way that it's, I'll talk about identity more next week, but you'll see the students will be struggling to know really who they are. So they want to find out. So if they can attach something to themselves with just a small group of people, even from one class to the next, that is who they then see themselves as being in terms of authenticity. So that's why it's not a problem. Because what matters most is I'm being real. Does that make sense? Any questions about that before I move on? Ellen.
Why? What happened to do that?
It's a great question. I'm going to come back to it in a second. Anybody else?
Well, do you think it's just their way to belong in different groups and being, I mean, when I think of, I'm sorry to be maybe narcissistic, I think about myself and how I was a layered, I had the layers and all that. And one of, I go to church choir, do the mission trip. But I also had a family who was very much wanting me to be popular, wanting me to have a boyfriend, all these things. And so to be popular, I was going to have to party. And I was going to have to belong by partying and doing, you know. And so I was a layered person, but I wanted to belong everywhere.
Yeah. Did you know you were layered?
Yeah.
That's the difference.
I'm the devil
are. That's the difference.
They don't see that hypocrisy.
They don't see it. And if they do, they don't care. Because that's what everybody does. Okay? Now, to Ellen's question, why? Deep down in every relationship we enter, we're motivated by fear or we're motivated by love. And it's almost always fear. That's why your high school yearbook is such a good place to go. It's almost always the case. I mean, you can experience it even in the church. I mean, if you're new or whatever, you come in like, you know. Or the way in which you get dressed for things, fear or love. Kids are starving to understand who they are, okay? Parents often are not helping them because you're, me, us, we're focused on behavior more than belief. And so they begin to feel those pressures of connecting or belonging. So they watch, they're surveying, you know, what does it mean to fit in this context? Who do I want to be? And we're going to talk a lot about that next week. What does that mean? And so if they find a way in which they can engage a cluster, a friend group, and though that group may be very different than who they are, in that moment, they need to protect themselves. And so they protect themselves by being as much like that group as they can be. And the disconnect towards, you know, what this might look like in terms of me being two-faced or whatever, just goes away. Because that's just kind of too hard or too heavy to deal with. So I'm going to be in this moment just like this. So for example, we all knew, and some of you probably were, the kid that was out on Friday night partying, but you came to church on Sunday. Did anybody, I'm just curious, be bold. Anybody do that? Was that your story? Okay. That's about what I expected. Okay. Several people do that. My guess is that most of you felt like that was wrong. You kind of knew. Kids today don't even see that as a big disconnect. Now, most of you are probably going, I don't buy it. Most of the people didn't buy Chap Clark either. And they're wrong. I'm telling you. I saw it. I would have conversations with kids that were like, guys, really? We just went on the Florida trip. You know, what happened? Some of you worked with youth. You've worked with youth. And you see it. You're like, what's going on? Let me give you an example. I led a Bible study. It's the last high school Bible study I led. Kim, you were there. You were on staff with us at this time. The Bible study was called the Pagan Bible Study. I loved it. These kids were, I mean, they were lost. There's about 30 of them from one high school, from one class. And we walked together from the time they were in seventh grade. They were pagans. And so some of them had become Christians. Some of them thought they were Christians, etc. Well, as their senior year approached, football was over. You know, the ones who were Christians were in this too. They began to make plans for what they were going to do as a certain dance rolled around, okay? It's normal high school stuff. I was like, man, they're not even ashamed to tell me. They're not even ashamed for me to hear it. It doesn't even register that, oh, Mark's in the room, okay? Very interesting. I'd never seen that before. That's why I'm telling you it was different. So I decided I'm going to mess with them. I'm going to really freak them out. And which I like to do that. So you'll remember this story. I came in and I had this kind of appearance of being perplexed or anxious. And they could tell I wasn't my normal self. And so finally one of the guys was like, hey, what's up? It was Philip Coons, who works on our youth staff now. What's going on? And Philip wasn't probably a believer yet. I said, I'm struggling with something. And I said, can I tell you guys? They're like, sure, whatever. I'm like, you know, I said, I had a contact with an old girlfriend through Facebook. And He's kind of messing with me. And they're as quiet as you are right now. Now, Christine, have I ever looked at Facebook?
No.
No.
Mine, maybe.
Yours. I don't have it. I don't do it. And I'm not going to. I don't think it would be good for me. And I'm not saying it is bad. I'm saying I don't want to do it. So I don't have it. But I knew this would work. I'm like, this girl, you know, that I dated in high school. And I've told stories about Carrie before. And a couple of guys are like, is it Carrie? I said, yeah. She reached out to me. And she wants to meet. She's going to be in Dallas this weekend. And I kind of want to see her. I don't think anything will happen, but I want to see her. It's been a long time. Nothing. So I think I'm going to. And one of them goes, what does your wife think? I said, I'm not telling her. I'm not going to do that. They freaked out. Mark, you can't do that. You can't do that. That's wrong. Yeah, I'm calling your wife. I'm like, you ain't calling my wife. I mean, and I let it go. Brent Baker was with me. And in fact, Brent didn't know I was doing this. Brent was like, Brent's, for those who don't know, Brent's one of our pastors and was on our youth staff. Still is. He's our youth pastor now. And I said, what bothers you, guy? What's bothering you? And one of them said it, not so clear, but pretty much, you're planning to sin. And I was like, well, I'm not going to do anything wrong. I mean, I don't think I am, but it's going to be too tempting. You know where I'm going. I said, well, let me ask you guys, what are y'all planning to do this weekend? Tell me specifically about your plans. Anybody here planning to sin? Anybody in here just planning to go? And they got it. They got it. But it didn't last very long, right? It became, this is a great story that Mark told us, but it didn't really generate much change in terms of what they were going to do. Does that make sense? This layer thing is interesting. Read his book, Hurt, to understand more of it. Now, does that mean your child is suddenly going to become, you know, a schizophrenic type person that you don't know? Well, maybe. Probably not really schizophrenia, but there will be different types of things that you see. But the reason I'm bringing it up is that they're going to be surrounded by people like that who will say things to them like, you know what, that really doesn't matter. It's not that big a deal. Everybody's doing it. My daughter Kara graduated from Highland Park High School last year. At the end of the year, she said, Dad, I know this many people who aren't drinking. This many. Five. I said, okay. I know the five. Praise God. She's one of the five. One of the rules we had was we don't do, prom sleepovers at somebody's ranch. Some of you might do that. Some of you think you won't do it, but you'll do it. Maybe you should. Maybe you shouldn't. We made that rule. We're not going to do that. And so, you know what that meant? Probably the best sermon I've ever preached in this church, I think. It's titled Overwhelmed. Came the morning after I drove from here to Melissa, Texas to pick her up at where her prom party was. Everybody else was spending the night. And I was the one who said, I'll go pick up the girls if you don't want to spend the night. And I'm the only one working the next day. And these loser dads. You know. So I didn't sleep. That's why it was a great sermon. And I drove out there, got Kara, got another girl I'd never met, but her parents said, please do this for us. And then the other girl, who was not one of the five, who was drunk. And I brought her home. Did that. Went to school with Kara from the first grade. Providence Christian Academy. And that was our story. Took her to her mom and dad. You know, she thought she could hide it the whole time. It was a pretty sad scene. And I think you heard me last week. We're not perfect parents. Our kids, any of them could do something like that. But the point is, there is a lot of pressure for kids to do certain things in order to fit into those contexts. And we shouldn't be living in paranoia or fear, but we need to understand the reality of what's there. And I'll tell you as a youth pastor first, most parents are completely clueless about what's going on. And you know why? They kind of want to be. I just don't really want to know. The flip side is the parents who are paranoid. And they think it's, you know, MTV every day, everywhere. Okay? And it's not. Both of those places are pretty bad places to live. Okay? To live in paranoia or to live in complete denial. So, layers. I talked about that enough. I know you're probably going, I'm not sure. But it's real. Yeah, Tim.
You make it to some point. When does it start?
The layers? Well, think of it this way. Whatever high school students were struggling with 20 years ago, about 10 years ago, middle school students started struggling with, and now it just keeps getting earlier and earlier. And I'll talk about why in just a minute, okay? So I'm going to move on from the layers thing for a minute, and I want to talk about three areas of the culture that are radically different, okay? That's kind of a bedrock level difference. I want to talk about three other areas. One is stress. How many of you felt stressed in high school? Then you wouldn't make it today. We all felt somewhat stressed, but I'll be honest. I was an AB student. My goal my senior year was to not take a book home. And I didn't. I mean, I didn't get into Princeton, but I did pretty good, okay? I was a little bit lazy, but it was like a challenge. I don't think I'll need to. I didn't cheat. I had at least that ethic. The world our kids are living in now is so stressful. And the reason it's so stressful is because the expectations, as I've mentioned already, are extremely high. Now, it's not wrong for you to want your child to succeed in academics, in athletics, etc. But here's the problem. I mean, really, if experts could come in from the outside and give us a real sense of what's going on, if we would just wake up and listen to them, it would be radically different. But we don't. And because we don't, every person that has a chance to influence your child is going to try and get the most out of them, no matter what the cost. And they're not talking to each other about that. So let me give you an example. My son's 15. How many hours of sleep a night do you think a 15-year-old needs? Don't think about what they're getting. Don't think about what you got. Think about the way God made the body. How many hours of sleep do you think a 15-year-old needs? By the way, he's grown 6 inches in about 6 months. So what do you think's going on? How much sleep does he need? 4 hours?
10.
Wow, I love that answer. He would love that too. Okay? He would love that too. Last Monday night, a week ago Monday night, I pick him up at track practice. It's a little before 6. He gets in the car. He's just done. I said, how'd it go? Fine. I said, good. Did you have a good day? Okay. You hungry? Mm-hmm. What do you want? I don't care. All right. Can you stop asking me questions? Sure. I can stop, but I'm not going to. Gets a little smile, but I'll stop because I know he doesn't want that right now. We go through a couple lights, and he says, by the way, I need you to get me up at 5:15 tomorrow. I'm like, really? Why? Because the coach told me I need to lift weights before school now because I'm in track. I said, wait a minute, you just got, it's 6. So they want you at school at 5:45, and then you're going to leave school at 5:45 p.m.? Mm-hmm. That's stupid! I want to yell at the coach. It's stupid! Because he's going to be up till 1 doing homework. That's his life. Not once in a while. Every day. He wants to do it. He wants to do it. Because he wants to start. And the coach said, look, you're fast. You have good hands. But you got to get bigger. Okay. All right. Bible study Tuesday morning for him. You going to go to Bible study? Nope. I'm going to lift weights. I got another Bible study. It's on Friday at 6. Youth pastor. You love the Lord? You picking football over Bible study? It's stupid! Don't ask my kid that. That's what's happening. And then the grades, maybe they tinker because they're studying Romeo and Juliet. And he's 15. And he's going to bed at 1:30. And he's getting up at 5:30. Think about it, everybody. What are we doing? Why? Why? They're more stressed out than ever before. And they don't think you understand. And they're right. How many of you watch Modern Family? Some of you are lying. Modern Family is a brilliant show. It's pretty messed up. Great writing. I don't watch it every night. But there was a scene I saw that made me weep. We don't have great technology to show it, or I'd show it tonight, but it's the middle daughter. What's her name?
Alex.
Yeah, some of you that answered that question did raise your hand a minute ago. Alex is the driven child. She's very smart. She's going to be valedictorian. She feels forgotten. She's the middle child. I relate to that. I'm the middle child too, but I wasn't valedictorian. And I was lazy. And there's a scene where she goes to see a psychiatrist. She's visiting a psychiatrist, and he's great. So they have this interesting exchange. The mom's outside waiting. She comes out, and she goes, "It went pretty good, you know," talks about it a little bit. And then the mom, she's eating some yogurt, I think, just kind of engaging. And the mom says, "You know what? I don't know how you do it. I mean, I could not do your world. I could not live in your world." And Alex just breaks down and grabs hold of her mom and starts sobbing. Because it's really the first time her mom has ever admitted, your world is hard. It is so hard. It's a moving, moving scene. Guys, our kids' worlds are hard. The expectations that we're giving, putting on them, they're not very healthy. And you as a parent, if you're not super engaged, you're going to be contributing to it in ways you don't even know. I listened to the principal, who's a neighbor, talk about the school and the pressure for Highland Park to continue to be this great school. It should be. That's the goal. But what happens is they don't connect the dots to what's going on between all these different activities. You know, one coach says this, another coach says this, another teacher wants this. And then on top of it, we want the spiritual foundation to be the strongest. There's barely anything left over to give the things that matter most. Now, where do you think your family time is going to fit into that? Right? It's very, very hard. And I don't regret anything I've said tonight in terms of what that looks like. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. And as parents, especially if you have little ones, you should begin to speak into that in every possible way you can. On boards, to teachers, every possible way you can. We need to wake up to the reality of how hard their lives are. Okay? I'm going to move on from stress. I want to talk about loneliness. Years ago, surveys were done. What is your greatest problem? The two things that high school kids said were their greatest problems were stress and loneliness. I feel lonely. You don't look lonely. You look like you have people surrounding you all the time. How many of you felt lonely in high school? At least some of the time. It's very, very, very normal. And so the social isolation that's there really centered on the idea that people don't really know me because I've got to perform everywhere I go. In whatever friend group I'm in, which could change from one class to the next, from one cluster to another, I'm always performing. I'm always on. Nobody really gets me, okay? It can be very, very lonely, and your child may look completely normal and connected. That's a big deal to pay attention to. The other one I'm going to mention, you know, is a big deal, and that is sexuality, okay? This right here is something I want you to look up over the next week. Life as we know it, E01, part one. Pull it up, just Google that. It'll take you to the opening maybe 8 minutes of a show titled Life as We Know It. Anybody ever heard of it? A couple of you? Here's the opening scene. And I really want you to watch it. You might be offended, but it was a primetime ABC special, not special, drama, hour long, about the life of high school kids. It was brilliantly done. Because what it was exposing people to the life of high school kids. It's fiction. It took place in Seattle, I think. And what it does is during the scenes, it pauses and the kids turn to the camera and tell you what they're thinking. Okay? Here's the opening dialogue. You'll see it yourself live, but I'll tell you what it is. It's a father and a son and a little brother sitting around the kitchen island. Each of them have like a quart of chocolate milk or a half a gallon of milk, and they're just chugging it out of the cardboard, just going at it. Moms, how many of you would like that? Okay, so that's what they're doing. Just, they're racing. The mom comes in. She's like, what are y'all doing? They stop. Mom's in the house. Because who's in charge of the family? So they stop. The dad just looks like an adolescent, trying to be cool, trying to be hip, right? They stop. Put that away. I don't want your back washing my milk. Okay, this is the pilot. This is the opening episode. Mom leaves. Right back at it. You know, they're racing. The dad wins, slams it down. All right? Kind of funny, kind of cute. 45 seconds, maybe a minute and a half into the show, now you get the three boys who make up the primary plot of this entire drama. Three boys are walking to school. Here's their topic of discussion. If you had to sleep with your mom or your dad, who would you choose? Except they didn't say sleep. They didn't like, oh, if you have a nightmare. If you had to have sex with your mom or your dad, who would you choose? ABC, 8 o'clock, Tuesday nights, 2004. 13 episodes recorded, only 11 made it. Thank God the show went away. But the problem didn't. What happened? Happy Days, pilot. The theme of the first show was about going to Blueberry Hill. Get a hickey. That was it. Can we get a girl to go up and go parking, necking? Things have changed. What do you think the conversation might be like now? Sexuality of our world is really, really, really messed up. Norman, Oklahoma, and I forget where on the East Coast, freshman boys, two worlds apart, very similar stories. Freshman boy raped by five other teammates with an instrument, right? How could that happen? Who could make that up? Who could invent that? They've seen it. They see it. You can find anything you want, and it's out there, and it's dark, and it's perverted, and this is the world that they are living in. And if you think it's not like that, they're not exposed to that kind of stuff, you've buried your head in the sand. It's really, really rough. It's really, really graphic. In a room this size, with this many people, there's a couple hundred people who registered for this. There will be many in here who have a child at some point that comes to you and says, I'm struggling with same-sex attraction. I think I'm gay. I'm telling you. Now, you can go right now. Not my son. Not my daughter. Not going to happen. Maybe it won't. Hope it won't. But we're going to see that just soar. I promise. It's just going to happen. It's the culture in which we live in. So what do? Three things. We get 10 minutes. That's plenty of time to just whet the appetite. First of all, our response is either fear, live in paranoia of it, and just completely retreat. The other is to become actually very engaged, try to know everything you can. Then there's a place that's kind of somewhere in the middle. The three things I want to talk about, I want to talk about being engaged in culture. I want to talk about protecting our kids from culture. And then I want to talk about how to equip your children for the culture. And that's really the rest of this whole series, okay? But here's what that looks like. You need to be engaged in culture. How many have heard things tonight that you hadn't heard before or wasn't sure it was so serious? Or just a new perspective, curious. Okay, a lot of you. And I'm not surprised. We need to engage the culture that our kids are growing up in. But we need to understand it is not, probably not going to become the wholesome world that you grew up in or your parents grew up in. Our world has radically changed. And I hope things change. But I'm telling you, the reality is based on a whole host of things. We talked about morals earlier, not really having even a common morality. It's going to be very, very interesting times. If you don't think that's true, ask your middle school counselors what they're having to go sit through now in terms of training as it relates to helping kids with transgender issues. They're sitting in meetings constantly because that's a big thing. What are you going to say? When a child comes forward, it's a mess. So We need to engage. So how can you engage in culture without becoming part of the culture? Here's a couple of ideas. Number one, you should read about it. You can find out a lot about what's out there in the culture just by picking up a magazine here and there that is about culture. If you want to have some fun, girls, you might like this more than the men, but go look at every cover of 17 magazine from the very beginning to the end. To now, look at the topics that are discussed. In some ways, it's not really much different. In other ways, if you flip the pages, it's radically different. Okay? Things have changed. Engage the culture. Listen to the music. I think actually this generation's music is getting better. There was a time period in the 90s that I'm like, I love my kids' music now. Not all of it, but some of it's actually good. Sounds a little bit more like stuff I grew up with. But listen to the words. Listen to what's being said. You can download or you can just look up lyrics and you're going to be like, oh, do they know what that means? They do. They know what it means. One example of the layers is, it wasn't that long ago. Remember, maybe in the summer, we're leaving church. They're already in the car waiting for me. We get in the car and we're leaving. And what did he just say? The two girls, older girls, have this song just blasting. Remember that? I don't even remember the name of the song, but I knew it wasn't good. And it wasn't what we just sang in church. So I'm like, whoa. So to Maddie and Kara, would y'all, what? Oh, Dad, it's just a great beat. Seriously, come on. I'm like, I think you guys love the Lord. Layers. I mean, Dad. Now, you might have thought that too when you were in high school and you were listening to Beastie Boys or whatever, but it's really, really dark, okay? So, no culture. But I want to tell you something. You may be closer to living in layers than you think. Your kids are watching you. And the stuff that you watch, you might need to ask why. And if it's because you want to know culture, you don't have to watch every episode. You don't have to watch every season. You don't have to know everything that's happening on The Bachelor. You don't have to know. And this is why this is important. John Piper, who's one of my favorite pastors of all time, certainly in the last few generations, says this: the greatest enemy of a hunger for God is not poison. It's apple pie. It's not the X-rated video. It's the primetime dribble of triviality we drink in every night. That triviality often is just, we're so tired, we just sit down on our bed or on a sofa, and we turn on the TV, and the stuff that just begins to roll. Okay, our kids are watching the stuff that we watch. I challenged my kids with some things that they were watching, and they pushed back. Well, Dad, doesn't Seinfeld talk about masturbation? Doesn't Seinfeld talk about group sex? I think I've seen you watch those shows. What's the difference? Now, some of you are like right now going, dude, I liked the class until Mark was saying, take away the Seinfeld. take away this. That's not really my style. What I'm telling you, though, is there's disconnects even in our lives in ways that we don't necessarily see. Okay? We need to be very careful that we actually aren't living in layers too, with some of the stuff that we're letting come into our life in the name of maybe relief or cleverness, entertainment. Okay? This is a big deal. The Word of God, which is what the foundation is I'm building on, trying to at least by God's grace, says this: but among you there must not be even a hint of what? Sexual immorality, impurity, or greed, for these are improper for God's holy people. Okay, one of the gods, one of the idols of this my generation, maybe a little bit up, a little bit down, is we love humor, we love good writing, smart writing. That's why Modern Family is actually a pretty amazing show. It's got great writing. You may hate it for the right reasons. Some of you might be like, yeah, but man, I was at a conversation with two dads recently. Their daughters were with me. I didn't know them very well. We're having this great conversation. And I listened to the dads talk about these two shows. And they were speaking of it in terms of an addiction. One dad literally said, I take my iPad And sometimes, because I hear my wife coming, I move into the other room just so I can finish the show. And it's not porn. It's just another show, but it's pretty raw. He literally said it. And he goes, I know you're a pastor, but it's really a good show. It's smartly written, pretty funny, and also dark. It's like, yeah, you just described why TV is so good, why the world thinks TV is so good right now, right? I said, well, tell me about some of the things that are on there. He's a Christian. So is the other guy. And I listened to their kids. And it was really fascinating because the kids heard some of it. They don't know what's going on those shows, but they begin to talk about their favorite shows. Two of the shows that the girls were talking about, I've never heard of. So I Googled them. I'm not going to say what they were yet. I Googled them. At what age would it be good for a child to watch this show? Okay. Everything I could read, the youngest was 13. You know, that was it. They were mostly around 14. These girls are 7. And that's what they're watching. I wonder if the parents know. I wonder if they know. Take Friends, for example. Okay? Anybody grow up watching Friends? What did Friends teach us about porn? Free porn is great. Let's just sit in the lounge chairs and watch porn all day. Joey, right there. Do you think those messages are really just intended for college students and older, high school students and older? If that's true, then why did they come out with a game called Friends and put it in the Christmas catalog of the JCPenney company for 5 years old and up? That's the disconnect, okay? It's just nuts. The stuff that we're able to see and be exposed to, in many cases, is so very ungodly. But because we like smart writing, because we like humor, I believe many of us are absorbing it. And then we expect our kids to have a different sense of how to think through those things. But among you, there must not be even a hint of sexual morality, impurity, or greed, for these are improper for God's holy people. Okay? We need to think through that a little bit. Your children are watching the things you watch. What do you think my response was when they came at me about Seinfeld, which I own every season? I don't even need to. They're on TV every night. What do you think my response was? See?
But I'm an adult.
That's what I thought. I was pretty ticked, you know? But they were right. Now, here's where I want to go. Engage culture. Understand culture. Engage culture. Protect your kids in culture. And the third one was, you remember? Equip your kids to deal with culture. It's right at the time to end, so I'm going to give you kind of a preface for next week. Protecting our kids from culture doesn't mean running away from culture. Okay? Many people make decisions about where their kids are going to go to school primarily out of fear and protecting them from culture. I don't think anybody that knows me would be offended by what I'm about to say, but my kids, elementary school, went to Providence, transitioned to the public schools, and it really went pretty well. I was asked to do a promotional piece for a capital campaign for the school that my kids were, that where they go now, the two younger ones, and where the other ones went through elementary. And the question that was given to me was, why is a classical Christian school like this, why does it help children spiritually thrive as compared to the public school? First question. And I said to my dear friend, I won't say who it was, my dear friend, I can't answer that because that's not true. Here's what I mean. As a youth pastor, I saw private school, Christian private school kids who absolutely loved Jesus. And I saw private school, Christian private school kids who said, I don't love Jesus because of my school. Right here in this city. And that was true of every Christian school around. Homeschool. That's the answer. And maybe it is for you. In St. Louis, I had a homeschool student who built a relationship, a same-sex relationship with somebody online, ran away, I spent five nights with one of our youth pastors trying to find him, and we finally did. My point is, we tend to think if we just do one thing, just this one decision, it's going to be enough. I know homeschool kids that love Jesus, and I know homeschool kids that hate him. I know public school kids that love Jesus, and I know public school kids that hate Jesus. What's my point? It's not the school, necessarily. Yeah.
Just a kind of odd game, though. I mean, if you want to go towards whatever you think is the highest probability of success.
I think that's how we think about it. I really think that's how we think about it. And that's about as far as we think about it. And we bury our head in the sand and think if we just do this. And it's not just a school, it's the right youth group. You know, youth groups and churches go through seasons where that's the hot one now, or then this one. And any parents following along, you know, and we get kids that come over here because their kid doesn't like that church or vice versa. It happens. My point is simply this. There's one foundation, one perfect foundation. It is Christ. It is the Word of God. It is us as parents listening to Him. Where do you want us to put our children? And listening. Now, are you going to hear God say, Trinity Christian Academy, Makola? No. No, you're not. But you know what you're going to hear? Through the work of the Holy Spirit, through counsel you seek from others. And by the way, when you seek counsel from people who are praying about the decision, not just telling you their opinions about their philosophy of education. And you'll have a sense. This is where God wants us to go this year. You know what that's called? Parenting in the present. Providence ended up not being very good for our boy. Great for a lot of other boys. So we pulled him out. We love that school. We love the middle school too that he went to and the high school. Guess what? They saw sin in all of them. It's everywhere. Fear makes us think retreat. That's not what God's calling us to do. He's calling us to engage, be present. Lastly, to equip our kids to be in the world. Because guess what? Whether they're in private Christian school, whether they're in the public school, or whether they're homeschool, one day, if they're healthy human beings, they will move out of your house. Long before that, they're going to be exposed to things, I promise you, earlier than you thought, probably deeper and darker than you thought. And you want to be in a place to engage them and equip them to be there. Does that make sense? And you know how you can do that? It is by building on the right foundation. Having a relationship with your child, not living in utter fear, but becoming a parent that really listens. Really listens. We're going to talk a lot about that. I went over a few minutes. We're going to pick right up where we left off next week, talking about identity. Look through your book. You should be moving forward now into the culture chapter. If you don't have one because you've not been here, we have some up here for you. Okay? Let me pray, and then we'll leave. Father, thank you so much for every man and woman that's here tonight and all the kids. It's awesome to think about all the kids represented. I pray that you give us a great sense of following you and hearing your voice. I pray that you encourage us and let us not live in utter fear. Teach us, Lord, what it means to be still and know that you're God and trust you constantly for the ones that you've given us to love. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. God bless.